The date is June the 2nd, 1977, and I'm talking with Mr. William Bousfield of the 49th Battalion, Canadian Expeditionary Force. Mr. Bousfield, could you give a brief rundown on your family background, where you were born, and when, so on?
I know where Dad was born, Westmoreland. Mother was born in Cumberland. And all the children, 8 of us, was born in Lancashire.
Right.
So that was 10 of the family.
When did you move to Canada?
In 1906.
And you were 11 years old then?
Roughly 10 or 11. Okay. I'm 82 now, so...
And you went to Grand...
No, we went to Manitoba, Rapid City. Dad was working on the farm there, and then we stayed there for 2 years, and then we got a farm of our own.
And when did you move to the Grand Prairie area?
I'm not positive of the year, but I know when I was in the army, I approved up the homestead, so it must be roughly in about 11,
in
Grand Prairie.
In 1914, when the war broke out.
In 1914, I was in Grand Prairie, working on the farm.
And you worked on the farm for a year after war broke out, and then you enlisted?
Well, it was a little more than a year, I believe.
And you enlisted in the summer of 1915.
There was a lieutenant from 49th Battalion was up there getting recruits.
Uh-huh.
And when I left home, I had no idea. Never thought about joining the army or being in the army. But when I was in Grand Prairie, I met 2 or 3 people who joined up. And first thing I know, I joined up myself. Then when I went home, told Dad about it. He was quite pleased. My 2 older brothers, neither one of those joined up. The 2 younger ones were still... They were too young. So, that's about the way it goes.
You mentioned the lieutenant in the 49th Battalion was,
His name was Meade.
Right. And he was going to the northern communities and recruiting.
Young
men.
Yeah.
And you met some people that had already signed up.
Yeah, that's right.
So, after you enrolled, or were enrolled in the 49th Battalion,
mm-hmm.
what happened then? What sort of training did you get?
Oh, training, just practically everything that recruit did, you know, because we had to be taught everything, shoulder arms and standard attention, all that kind of crap. I know I was on guard one time, and the colonel of the army came in, and I never called out the guard. So I got put down in the Oakwood Squad for about a month.
The what squad?
Oakwood Squad, that
Oakwood Squad.
Yeah. So, that was really the first bad mark against me, and in Canada, then when I went to the old country, it was, especially during the winters when I was laying and loafing around, I took what we call French leave. I just went and without permission or anything else, so I did that 3 times.
Could you tell me a little bit more about the Awkward Squad?
The Awkward Squad? Yeah, they just put you in with the new recruits. And I had to go through all the same performance that we'd already done. And the way of marching.
Aside from marching, what other type of training did you receive, say in trench warfare?
We didn't get much from that until we got to France.
And that was learning on the job, eh?
Just learning on the job, yeah.
How long was it before you enlisted? How many months was it before you were in France?
Roughly 10 months.
10 months.
It might have been a trifle longer, or a trifle less, but it, I would say 10 months. Maybe it might have been a year.
How long did you, in England? Did you receive any training in England?
No, after we got off the boat, we had to go to the battalion headquarters. From there, another came around one Sunday recruiting troops from the, well, I was recruited, she's about 500 or 600 of us, you see. But the whole story is, I was in the 66th battalion. I joined up in the 66th, and I'm transferred to the 49th.
In England?
Yeah.
Oh, I understand.
So, I know we was at a seaside resort in England when they went around looking for recruits to pick up the 49th battalion. They wanted 500 of us, so 500 of us joined up.
And then, when did you first go up the line?
It was on a Sunday when we volunteered. And during the next week we went up the line.
With the 49th?
To the 49th. Yeah.
The 66th Battalion, was that a reserve battalion? Or?
That was like an ordinary battalion.
It was?
Just all recruited. Most of it was homesteaders from the Peace River country. Some around from around town, of course, around Edmonton, but...
What were your feelings, impressions of your first action? Anything?
Well, there's one thing I didn't like of all was what I called the whiz-bangs.
That was a kind of shell.
It's a small kind of shell, and then the bounce was really a shell. They seem to go by about 1,000 miles an hour. And the way they could almost get a man standing a mile away. Do you understand? And come close to him. Yeah. That was the worst thing of all, was the whiz bangs and the whiz bangs and the bombs, of course. Because she was always safe as long as you were in a little retrench a foot deep with a bomb. Unless you get a direct hit, which you're finished anyways then, but that doesn't happen very often.
Were you, a couple of times the 49th Battalion advanced in daylight against machine gun fire, do you recall that?
Well, that happened half a dozen times or more, to my knowledge. I know we was fighting the Germans, but the name of the town or the district, I couldn't remember that.
Well, that's not too important, but what was it like to have...
Well, of course, you're nervous. But I was going to say that I'm a little bit of soldier than the majority of it, because a lot of them were pretty well go up the head, you know, very, very nervous. Another thing that I really do remember, when the first time I was wounded, no, the second time I was wounded, we had to go back to about 3 miles to a dressing station. And all over bald-headed prairie, in France, And you get in the habit when you hear yourself coming over to dust. So when we was, all there about six of us, all going out to the dressing station, and I don't know, we hear the artillery overhead, so we ducked, and there's only one place to duck, and that's a shell hole. And sometimes in those shell holes, two or three dead men floating around on top of the water. So that's, wasn't so good, that part wasn't. And I was wounded in the leg at that time, just right in the thigh and getting in that dirty water. And my wound went out of fried flesh.
How were you wounded? By a shrapnel?
Shrapnel, first time, second time, machine gun bullet.
While you were advancing against? How did, when somebody's, you know, when somebody's firing, when a bunch of people are firing machine guns at you, how do you advance? Do you crawl on the ground?
Well, different places are different. And sometimes we could get out separate about 8 to 10 feet apart, if we could. So you see, and that's the less chance of getting wounded or getting killed, you see, if you're a few feet apart, you see. You only get the odd one. And one week going over the prairie on the Somme, I noticed in particular, was one or two men ago, and I was looking around, and we lost about 100 men that had just run over to the trenches, I think. You could see them going, and the different lines up, you could see them getting worse.
Yes, yesterday you mentioned like there was, the troops were infested with lice and were rats and stuff. If you wouldn't, that's sort of unpleasant.
What is that again?
There were a lot of lice and rats in the trenches.
Oh, every trench is full of them. Absolutely full of them. Now, my time, we see, and sometimes we'd go out for 2 weeks at a time, and then we'd get out on some barn, really, some French barn. And we put as many as we could in that barn, two hundred or a little less, just depending on how many was old. And then if there's some open ground around the following day, you see us all sitting out in prayer, but there's no damn clothes out, killing lice.
You take your clothes off and
look for the lice you killed. Yeah.
What other things of trench, life in the trenches, can you recall?
Well, first of all, the lice was more or less older than old trench, where Jim had occupied it at one time before we took it away from him.
That was where most of the lice was.
Well, all the trenches seem to get lousy.
Yeah.
As towards the fence, you know, as far as that. They would breed like everything else. As soon as you went in there and sit in there for 24 or 48 hours, you get your number of lice, which is plenty.
Another one of the problems in trench warfare was trench feet.
Of course, that was different compared to the week. We didn't have the amount of rain there that we had here. Only times you would get a really heavy shower, we get about 8 inches, 10 inches of water.
In the bottom of the trench.
In the bottom of the trench. And then we had a duck walk, we call it a duck walk. And we used to come right over that, of course. A duck walk prevented us from getting any deeper, which is about 4 inches thick, was a duck walk.
Could you, I'm not sure I understand what you mean by a duck walk.
A duck walk is, well, it's made out of 2 to 4s, and the width of the trench might only be out of 2 by 6 inches.
Well, it was the wooden boards on the bottom of the trench.
More or less, it just, Well, we put the two before them, he said, then we put the board about every, it was leaving about 3 inches apart between them. Food is terrible.
Food is terrible.
Of course it is. Our cooks had to work under difficulties. Some of them was with a shelf high too. So that made it worse.
What was the typical ration in the trenches?
Well, sir, the morale was pretty good.
I meant ration.
Oh, the ration, well, of course, the ration was sent up as we had to carry them all up, carry a bad boy, and carry everything up.
And what did you eat? Did you eat mostly bread?
Bread and, you know how a big cheese is made?
A big round.
Just send those up, and I seen more than one of those buried. They wasn't even used.
Oh, why was that?
Well, nobody was hungry for cheese. I was different because I carried cheese around for emergency rations.
I see.
But I used to think it was a shame to see all that cheese just buried, you know?
Yeah.
And the bread was always stale. And when we got up, sometimes we didn't get any.
You mentioned morale. Morale was good in spite of all the...
Morale was good. Through 90% of the people in the trenches.
What sort of... In your opinion, why was morale good?
Well, of course, morale of the troops is mostly held up by the officers or anybody who's given us a lecture.
The officers contributed or helped? Yeah,
we're going so-so in a few days, and they would tell us.
You always felt the officers were straight with you?
Pretty well, yeah.
So that helped because you trust them.
I tell you another thing though, some people might not agree with it, but I know it's the truth. When there's a bunch of us sitting around, you know, and after supper or after a meal, somebody will say, well, I'm going to get a nice blanket next time we go in. Someone will say, yes, I'm going to get a blanket too. The blanket they got, they was killed.
They were killed getting blankets?
The person would often say, well, I'm not going to get blighted. That's just a wound, you see, so you can go outside to England.
Oh, I see. Oh, right.
But instead of getting a blighted, you can get a bullet that killed them.
I mean, people deliberately try and get themselves wounded to get out of the front line.
Yes, they can do that.
What did you do in your spare time, if you had any in the trenches? Do you play cards?
Well, no, I never played cards all the time I was in the trenches. I never saw games when I was in the trenches. All because, as I already said, there's so many of us would be on duty, looking over trenches to see if Germans is coming in. Some of them would be asleep. All of them would do anything they just pleased.
What sort of activities would that include then? Did people read books or anything like that?
No, I never saw anybody reading. Or playing cards. But then when we was out of an arrest, everybody was playing cards or playing that. Oh, that Navy game, that and Crown and Anchor. You see hundreds of us playing that. I know one time I won 800 francs. I took the boys out and held the platoon and got them high and drunk. And I had that money, and that was a lot of money those days for a soldier.
When you did go down the line, What sort of facilities did they provide for resting?
Facilities?
Yes, when you were off the front, was there a YMCA and canteen?
No. We get all those when we went out for a rest.
That's what I mean. When you went down for the rest,
And the best one of the whole lot was the Salvation Army.
Oh, yes.
That was the best one of the whole bunch. I see this come back, you know, to rest at 4 o'clock in the morning. Here's the Salvation Army. It's all open. Give us all coffee. The other ones are closed and sleeping. Yeah. Salvation Army is really good.
How long would you spend in a rest?
Oh, sometimes 2 days. It's depending on how the prisoner would be behaving. But 2 days to 3 days. Then we come out once a month and maybe walk about 3 miles for a bath. The minutes had a bath as often as ever they could.
When you were in the trenches, like you, there was a system of 3 different trenches, and you would rotate up to the front line, and then to a rest, and then back up through the trenches. Is that right?
No. See, when while we're in the trenches, we're allowed to get orders, but we got to take the next trench. That's the Germans. Sometimes the Germans are only about 60 yards from us. And we're all going to clock at once, right on the dot at 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock or whatever it may be. We're all, the whole bunch of us, we're all those trenches and away over. Of course, and in some cases, the artillery helped us a lot. They would put a barrage over right on that trench, German trench. And then you see them fellows scattering, going back to the line behind them.
What was it like? The Germans must have done the same thing.
The Germans just back then?
They would shell your trench as well. What was it like to be under fire? What, did you just sort of lie in the bottom of the trench?
I know at one time there during the war, I couldn't tell you the year or the month now. The Germans are sitting there about 20 shells to our one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that was quite a majority too.
What would you do when you had incoming shells? Just lie down and wait for
them. As long as we could hide our bodies somewhere. Some of the boys there would make a little hole right in the bottom of the trench from the dirt. Then they get in there. I know one time I went into a hole and everything was black and dark in there, and when I got in far enough I put my hands out and here there was a corpse. Which is not a very nice feeling either.
No. Was it very common for a trench to get a direct hit with a shell? For the shell to land right in the trench?
That didn't happen very often. Because of the artillery, you know, they're going by, the plane is overhead, you see, and they give the artillery the directions either too far or too short. But very suddenly we get a direct hit on the trench. Very suddenly. In fact, all the time I was over there, it never happened to me.
Did it ever happen close to you?
Not to my knowledge. You'd be close by 25 yards or something like that.
Yeah.
No, never did. And then again, you know, we've gone over to the German trenches, and they're almost level with the ground. Battered off the hill. This was our artillery just happened.
So you felt, would you say that the Allied artillery was a little more effective than the German artillery?
Sometimes. Now the time that I was following up there, our artillery advancing, never shell fell short to get us at the deadline where they got us, because we was Oh, my, only a matter of about 25 yards. Working with the artillery, just at a second, you know, they changed, and the second we advanced that much, maybe 50 yards or 100 yards. Then I had to wait again until the other artillery bombed the German trenches, and then we'd get the final signal to go to.
So you never had a short shell then?
No, never. And those short shells are really bad, you know.
Now, a few Canadian units did get hit that way.
It must have been.
What? Oh.
And it's been known for officers to get killed by their own men to shot right in the back.
Oh, and why would that be? Because they...
Somebody disliked them or they'd done something. Maybe the officer had reported them for some other thing. They've got CB or detention in jail. And I trust some people don't like that. Always some screwball head and then shoot anybody in the back anyway. But it's been happening several times over there. Then looking at me, who recruited all the little piece of sugar country, he got shot the same way right in the back.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
CV confined to barracks, how would they do that in the trenches, like you weren't in a barracks as such?
Oh, we used to get away with quite a lot when we were in the trenches, because they couldn't do much with us. We got no jail or anywhere to put a person.
How did they maintain discipline in the trenches then?
It's by word of mouth, as far as I remember.
Word of mouth, could you?
We could do this, we could do that, and then we also didn't know what we could do and what we couldn't do.
I suppose most of what you were told to do is for your own good anyways.
It was. And a soldier generally does what he's told anyways, you see. That drove right into us.
What if, were there any, did you know of any instances where somebody didn't follow an order, or?
Well, it's quite a long time ago, you know. A person forgets a lot of the stuff.
Oh, well, yeah.
But as a whole, the noise is pretty good.
What, aside from shooting a person who refused to obey an order, what else could they do? Nothing.
Well, of course, that is quite easy to do, you know, especially when they're advancing, because our officers also had us.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you shoot them, you see, well, maybe 99% of them shoot the Germans, and the other one that is fight against that officer, well, he could shoot the officer. That is the way that goes, you see, as far as I know.
So the officers maintain discipline by personal example and that sort of thing. There was no, that's the only way they could have done it.
But it's pretty hard to discipline anybody when you're in the trenches.
Exactly.
Because they can't do much with us, they can't put us in jail or the guard room, because it's really not in the front line.
But it wasn't. There wasn't that wasn't a problem, though. There was good discipline.
See, when we were outside, everything was more disciplined then than there was even in the trenches. Because it's quite easy to throw them in the garden for a month or 2 months, 3 months. And if it was a severe case, it was sent right outside in the glass house. Let the imperials look at it. That's been very strict there.
The Imperial, that's the British Army?
Mm-hmm. There's quite a number of boys that sent to the glass house.
And was that in France or was that in England?
No, but it couldn't do it in France really because it was too far away, would you see?
The second time you were wounded, where, what action was that?
Pardon?
The second time you were wounded, do you recall
They're saying, no, my Lord, it is under some. That's when I had to walk about 3 miles back to the dressing station.
That was with machine gun.
That was with machine gun, yes. I was going over the top. And I got it right through the hand. And that was pretty well done now.
I see, yeah.
But,
when you were wounded like that, you were walking wounded, you walked back to a first aid station, and they would fix you up there, and then what would happen?
Then there was shit, if your wound was bad enough, there was shit right there in there. So, there's always some train of some kind, going with them a couple of miles of other dressing stations.
The first time you were wounded, were you sent back to a casualty clearing station? Or?
No, I was sent right to England.
Right to England?
Right in the north of England. That's the way you want to go, you know. I was married at that time, and I just said, just around London. They sent me to Lancashire, about 200 miles away.
Don't worry about that.
Is that one of the nurses?
I didn't see who it was. Anyway, so you were sent to north of England.
North of England. I was sent to the hospital before I was wounded, was all healed up and fit. And then we all have an East Battalion or East Brigade as a headquarters in England. Then you go there. And then you drill in and you're marching just to keep fit.
Then they reassign you when you're well.
Then they went to show to people in France, they sent word away. They said, well, you're going. No words in out, you're gonna go in or what you want to say.
What was the pay for a private soldier back then? Do you know
what?
The pay? How much?
The pay was $1.10 a day.
$1.10 a day.
When you joined up, it was $1.10 a day. Then if you was an NCO, like a sergeant, corporal, you got 10 cents a day more. You got 10 cents a day more for each stripe.
I see.
If you're a sergeant, well, you got 3 stripes, you see. That's 10 cents extra.
Were you a private the whole time of your service?
No, I was. When I was in England during the winter, I've got.